News Radio 59, information check at 6:59. Clear and cold tonight, 15 to 20 degrees. Tomorrow, increasing cloudiness, light snow beginning at night in the mid-30s. Right now in Boston, it's 32 degrees. On Wall Street today, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is down nearly a point, closing at 805.01, the volume more than 30 million shares.
This is WEEI, CBS in Boston, News Radio 59.
The headline stories at this hour, a woman has been killed and a man seriously injured in a collision between a car and a fire truck in Dorchester. Three major U.S. firms are being sued by the state's attorney general for allegedly fixing the prices of gas meters. And the Patriot Ledger reported today that nine people have been subpoenaed to testify before a special grand jury investigating alleged race-fixing in Foxborough. I'm John Linker, and now WEEI continues its coverage from New York. The time is exactly 7 o'clock.
CBS News, the Shah of Iran is handing over some of his power in an effort to keep the rest of it and end the violence that is tearing his country apart. This is Doug Poling reporting on the CBS Radio Network. Earlier in the day, it was reported that the Shah would be leaving Iran temporarily, but now it's been confirmed he's given an opposition leader the mandate of forming a new civilian government. The Shah's people deny that he intends to abdicate and will stay on in Iran. In Tehran, CBS News correspondent Bert Quint has some information on the move to form a new government.
The man who has been speaking with the Shah about forming a new government is Shapur Bakhtir. He's a Paris-educated opposition politician, the number two man in the National Front, which is the major opposition group. Bakhtir said tonight, told CBS News, that the Shah promised that he would leave the country for a rest, but as Bakhtir said, he's the king. We couldn't ask him when or where he was going. The palace says the Shah isn't going anywhere for a rest or anything else. But the palace does confirm that Bakhtir has been given the job and has accepted the task of forming a new civilian government to replace the military cabinet now ruling Iran.
CBS News correspondent Bert Quint in Tehran. The United States today, in a move to keep a close eye on the situation in Iran, ordered an aircraft carrier and support ships to a standby position in approaches to the Indian Ocean. At the State Department, CBS News correspondent Marvin Kalb says the carrier Constellation will be ordered to leave the Philippines tonight. Kalb said the movements are apparently intended to bolster the spirits of America's allies and friends in the Persian Gulf area. There are reports the United States will lodge two strong protests with the Soviet Union over Moscow's charge that Washington was interfering in the internal affairs of Iran. The Soviets tonight renewed their allegations, charging the U.S. with interference and saying the Iranians should be allowed to resolve their problems on their own. More news in a moment.
Take your contact, take it now. Give your cold to contact.
Can your cold medicine fight the congestion, shrink the swollen membranes, help relieve the runny, sneezy, cloggy misery caused by every known cold virus? Are you sure? Contact can. Today's Contact does all that up to 12 hours, all day, all night, no matter what cold virus attacks. That's the wonder of Contact.
If you're cold, to contact.
Take only as directed.
Ever wondered what happened to those news stories that were very hot for a time and then faded from view? CBS News will tell you what happened every Saturday on Follow-Up. Each week, a CBS News correspondent will reach into the past for an important news event and bring it right up to date. Whether it was an international story or one that happened right here at home, you'll hear the latest on it. Listen here for Follow-Up starting Saturday, January 6th on CBS, your number one radio network for news, programs, and sports.
Federal investigators in Oregon said today a United Airlines DC-8 jet lost power moments before it crashed into a residential area of Portland last night. 10 of the 185 people aboard were killed. Authorities thought most of those on board survived because there was no fire after the crash. In Portland, Elwood Driver of the National Transportation Safety Board said officials will probably spend about 3 weeks probing the wreckage.
This time is going to be utilized in the following manner: to find and to gather as much data and facts as possible about the accident, even if it does not at that time appear to be germane. This is going to involve a very meticulous and a very thorough investigation and check into the aircraft itself, into the cockpit voice recorder, into the flight data recorder, into the tower tapes, specific questions to witnesses and investigations by the groups that were formed in an organizational meeting.
Some ground and air travel is being hampered this New Year's Eve weekend. Up to 8 inches of snow was on the ground in the suburbs of Chicago, 5 inches in the city. Snow fell from the Rockies and the Northern Plains states into the Great Lakes region. The Agriculture Department reports prices for raw farm products rose 3% in December. Farm prices this month are 22% above the same levels of a year ago. On Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrials finished the year close to the point where they began, just a little lower, in fact. In today's trading, which totaled 30,030,000 shares, the industrials were down 0.95. They closed out 1978 at 805.01. On the first trading day of the year, they stood at 817.74. And now this message.
Holiday parties can be a lot of fun, but driving home can be a dangerous business when you've been drinking. The effect of alcohol depends on how much you've consumed over what period of time. For example, 3 ounces consumed in 2 hours will release inhibitions and tensions. 10 ounces in 2 hours severely affects motor ability, speech, and emotions, and makes you a menace at the wheel. One way to lessen the effect of alcohol is to eat bulky foods that are high in protein or fat, and then wait 15 minutes before drinking. The food tends to sponge up the alcohol. Also, dilute your drinks with water and ice to lower the concentration of alcohol and sip them more slowly than usual. And finally, one classic rule. Don't drink for at least 1 hour before you intend to go home. Substitute some other beverage, cake, or food for that last drink. Make up your mind to have a safe and happy holiday this year. This message from CBS, your number one radio network for news, programs, and sports.
Doug Poling, CBS News.
Good evening. I'm Lon Braithwaite, WEEI News Radio time, 6 minutes after 7. We have a temperature in Boston of 32 degrees, 0 degrees on the Celsius scale.
This is Ed Berger. In my business reports on WEEI, I've talked a lot about the toll inflation takes on the wealth of the average American. But you know, most of us are pretty lucky. We're able to afford the necessities of life, food, heat, and a decent place to live. I want you to think for a minute about how you'd get by if your income was less than $400 a month. That's what many older Americans live on, and it isn't easy. This year, the WEEI 59 Fund is raising money to help meet the emergency needs of Boston's low-income elderly citizens. In January, all the donations WEEI receives will be transferred to the Boston Elder Emergency Fund, a private fund for food, heat, medicine, and other emergency needs. You can help. Please send a tax-deductible contribution to the 59 Fund, WEEI, Boston, 02199. Thank you.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... I'm E.G. Marshall. Samuel Clemens, better known by his pen name, Mark Twain, had a long love affair with the Mississippi River. Glowing with sparkling remembrance, he has claimed, considering the Missouri, its main branch, it is the longest river in the world, 4,300 miles. The Mississippi is remarkable in another way. It is always moving its habitat bodily. Always moving sideways. Remember that and listen.
That is the reason for the ring on the finger.
The ring?
So that if one should wake and twitch, the dead bell would ring.
What a fearful bell.
If you were a corpse and woke back to life in the dead house, you might not hear it that way.
Mystery drama, The Dead House, was adapted especially for the Mystery Theater by Ian Martin and stars Leon Janney and Robert Dryden. It is sponsored in part by True Value Hardware Stores and Contact, the 12-hour cold capsule. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
Take your contact, take it now, give your cold to contact.
Before you choose a cold medicine, you should know that no cold tablet, no cold liquid has found the way to give you Contact's continuous relief. One Contact works up to 12 hours, helps relieve all your congestive symptoms, all day, all night. That's the wonder of Contact.
If you're cold, to Contact.
Take only as directed.
1921, Dr. Banning and Dr. Best discovered that insulin prolongs life for diabetics. Their discovery has enabled countless millions of diabetics to lead almost normal, productive lives. But unfortunately, insulin does not cure diabetes. It's time to cure diabetes, and it's time we all help. If you can give help or need help, call your local American Diabetes Association. I'm Gerald Ford. I thank you.
Here's a tip from your Better Business Bureau. Are you in the market for a used car? If you are, it would be wise to shop around until you get a feel for the market. It's important for you to find out if the car is covered by a warranty. A used car warranty is limited. For example, it may cover the first 1,000 miles or 30 days. Remember, however, the warranty is as good as the dealer who backs it. And you check his reliability with your local Better Business Bureau. Also, remember that careful inspection is the key to enjoying a used car. Be sure and look for rust. Check the tires, the shock absorbers, and the operating controls. And incidentally, it's also a good idea to take a test drive. You see, by giving the car the once-over before you buy it, you're protecting yourself against a faulty purchase and a lot of headaches after you've bought it. This has been a tip from your Better Business Bureau.
In all our American history, possibly nothing has been more romantic than the sailing of a Mississippi River boat. From an hour before sailing, they would be burning pitch and rosin, and from the double smokestacks, columns of coal-black smoke would rise and hang in the air like the flags flying from the jackstaffs. The last bells would clang out over the end of feverish loading. The gangways were snatched away. The majestic boat moves out into the stream. This is the world Mark Twain wrote about 21 years after being a riverboat pilot. And this is one of the stories he tells of that voyage.
Welcome aboard, sir.
I thank you, Captain.
I have just turned over the boat to the pilot. I'm surprised you didn't make straight for the pilot house the moment you came aboard.
Why, I considered it closed to ordinary passengers.
Oh, indeed it is. But you're not going to try to hoodwink me and tell me that you are any ordinary passenger.
Well, just poor scribbler and indifferent journalist who hopes to make a chronicle of the voyage, which perhaps might make a book.
Oh, you think our voyage might provide you with enough incident for that?
It is my hope.
Well, why don't you go on up to the pilot house where you can swap tall stories with a master?
I'm hoping to run this trip incognito.
Sam, it's up to you. If you want my pledge, no one should know you're aboard, you have it.
I thank you for that.
How far will you be going with us? All the way to New Orleans?
Well, I'd like to, for old time's sake, but no, not near as far.
Yeah, just tell me your port of call, and we'll set you down easy.
I'll let you know in time to bring it ashore. So, once again, I was aboard a paddle steamer going down the Mississippi. But since I wanted to observe and report, I needed to remain objective. And then there was my special errand. I suppose I might as well drift into that history now. Toward the end of the previous year, I had been in Germany, in Munich, spending some time there with the hope of polishing my proficiency in the language. I am an incurable rambler. And during one of my wanderings, I visited the Dead House, an establishment where the government keeps and watches corpses until they decide that they are permanently dead and not in a trance. It was a grisly place, that I shared with 36 corpses and the old lady who watched over them.
Can ich hier helfen, mein Herr?
Ein Schuldiger mir. Ich kann einzig klein Deutsch sprechen. Ich bin Amerikanischer.
So, we can speak English, if you will.
Oh, thank you, thank you. To whom do I speak?
I am the Frau Dahlweiner, now a widow. What brings you to the Schermutig place?
Schermutig? That means in English what? Sad, melancholy?
Yeah, melancholy.
Ah.
Here are the poor on these boards. No one mourns or cares for them.
They're wrapped in shrouds, so they must be dead.
Perhaps. Who is dead and who is alive? These are the doctor's choices. And the doctor is only a man. That is the reason for the ring on the finger.
The ring?
To which the wire is attached, which mounts to the ceiling, and so back into the watchroom, where it is attached to the dead bell.
A bell.
So that if one should revive and twitch or move, the dead bell will ring, and we shall know that they are not dead.
Oh, how strange. What a fearful bell.
Oh, if you were a corpse and woke back to life in the dead house, you might not hear it that way.
It's fascinating. May I ask more questions? Your English is very good.
Oh, my lodger has taught it to me. He is an American.
Here in Munich?
Yes. If you are staying here, would you not like to come and see him? He is very ill. Perhaps you can raise his spirits. He knows far more of this fearful place than I do. This watchman's job was his before he took sick.
Well, I don't know. I shall be leaving Munich shortly.
Oh, such a short walk. And it would mean so much to him. Surely a man needs some warmth from some fire if he is about to die.
I had simply thought, of course, that I was making a good Samaritan's trip. And from my first meeting, nothing should have changed that thought. He was a living man. But he did not look it. Propped on the pillows, his face was wasted. His hand on his breast, so emaciated, it was like a talon. As Frau Dahlweiner began her introduction, his eyes opened slowly and glittered wickedly from the twilight of their caverns.
Oh, Herr Ritter, here is Herr Clemens come to meet you. Now, Herr Ritter, that is no way to treat a stranger in our country, an American besides.
American, is it?
Yeah, that's right.
What brings you to see me?
The gentleman came to see you at my request. I thought to talk to an American again would lift your spirits.
There's little can do that. An American? From where in America?
Well, I was brought up in Hannibal, Missouri.
Missouri? State next to Arkansas. You wouldn't know Mariana, no?
I do, for a fact.
Then that would make us neighbors.
Oh, I think I should leave you two gentlemen alone. I'll make some coffee while you get acquainted.
Oh, danke.
Never mind the coffee. Would you say we were neighbors?
Well, not quite. Hannibal is north of St. Louis. Mariana, a piece far south. Maybe 450 miles the crow flies from Hannibal to Mariana. Pretty near twice that far by the river.
The Mississippi.
The Mississippi.
You know that river?
Yes, I know it. Once upon a time, like the palm of my hand, and better.
How come?
Up to 21 years ago, I was a riverboat pilot. But I left the river.
You don't make your home there anymore?
No. My home now is in Hartford, Connecticut.
So, you don't ever expect to go back west, eh?
Oh, sure I do. When I return to the States, the first thing I plan to do is to go back and take a journey down the Mississippi. see if I even recognize her anymore.
What do you mean?
Mr. Ritter, there never was a woman as fickle, as flighty as the Mississippi. Why, that river can make prodigious jumps almost by night. And by cutting through narrow necks of land, straighten and shorten itself and change the shape of the country. A man could go to sleep one night in the state of Mississippi and wake up to find himself in Louisiana the next morning.
I know.
Well, you worked on the river.
No, but I sure made use of it.
Oh, how's that?
Oh, when I was young, I was a heller, a fighting, drinking, gambling man. And then when I had a little money and a rage to settle down at last, I bought me some land in Arkansas cheap and settled in to make a homestead. But I was too far from the river for it to pay, so I...
So, you made a cut.
I guess I can afford to admit it now. No human law's gonna catch up with me anymore. It's, one dark night when the river was rising fast, I cut me a little gutter across a neck of land. I don't have to tell you what happened.
In no time at all, old lady Mississippi wrought a miracle. The whole river took possession of that little ditch and put your plantation flat on its bank, while the other party's property became an island that shoaled up so no boat could get within 10 miles of it.
And by as much as his property went down, mine went up.
If you'd been caught cutting that ditch, they'd have tarred and feathered you and strung you from a tree.
In a lot of ways, I might have been better off.
Well, why'd you do it? Was money all that important to you?
It was, and it wasn't.
Well, that's a little cryptic. I don't quite follow that.
I sold the land.
For a handsome profit.
$25,000.
Why? That's a fortune.
I know. The trouble was that you and I are not alone in recognizing it.
What do you mean by that?
I never told this to another living soul. I never thought I would. But now I must, if you will help me. But for today, I'm too worried to tell you the story, and I still must think on whether I can trust the stranger. Could you come back tomorrow?
Well, I'm not sure.
You must. You have to hear my story. You cannot refuse the request of a dying man. You were a miracle sent by God. The only man who can bring me salvation, who can save my soul.
And with these words, according to Mark Twain's story, the dying man fell back on the bed, asleep or in some sort of coma. In haste, Mark Twain fetched the widow and left the man in her care, troubled in his mind as to whether it would be in Ritter's best interest or his own to return. I shall be back with his decision shortly.
Hi, Pat Summerall. True Value Hardware Stores know that a mechanic has different tool needs than a homeowner. He needs more tools because he has more ways to use them. But the homeowner and the mechanic both share the need for quality tools, like True Value Hardware Store's exclusive line of Master Mechanic hand tools. You can add versatility to your workshop with the Master Mechanic 17-piece socket set that includes 11 sockets, a socket extension, reversible ratchet, and more. Choose either the standard or metric set for just $19.97 each. True Value Hardware Stores also offer the Master Mechanic 6-piece router bit set for just $18.97. These precision machined bits are designed for heavy-duty routing, slotting, and grooving. Get these and other quality Master Mechanic hand tools exclusively at participating True Value Hardware Stores.
True Value Hardware is more than just a name. It's a way of doing business that means true.
This is Max Morath to tell you about Choice Magazine Listening, a free service for the blind and others with a sight handicap. 6 times a year, Choice Magazine Listening brings you on phonograph records 8 hours of selections from leading publications featuring writers like Kurt Vonnegut, Lillian Hellman, E.B. White, Art Buchwald, Saul Bellow, and many others. It's all free as a service of the nonprofit Lucerna Fund. And the special record player required is also free on loan from the Library of Congress. If loss of sight or other handicap deprives you or a friend of the joy of reading, Choice Magazine Listening can help you. For more information, telephone 516-883-8280. I'll repeat that, 516-883-8280. Or write Listening Box 10, Port Washington, New York, 11050. That's Listening Box 10, Port Washington, New York, 11050. No one has said it, someone should have. Words to this effect. Unless you are a priest or a doctor, avoid the confession of a dying man. He is only trying to transfer the cross from his shoulders to yours. In that early winter of 1883, Mark Twain, living in Munich, Germany, or as it was then, Bavaria, fell into this trap.
I could have taken to my heels and run. Then again, the incurable curiosity of the author beckoned me to stay. I could not resist. I had to hear the dying man's confession.
I have never given up before, but last night I did. I know I'm going to die. You say you are going to revisit your river. If you do, you will see Napoleon, Arkansas, and I asked you when you are there to do a certain thing for me.
I can make no promises.
I ask none, only the dictates of your conscience. Now come back with me all those years towards the end of the war between the states. Here's what happened. And I guess the way you'd have to understand it best is to meet Nell.
How do you like it, Mrs. Ritter?
It's heaven. I just want it to go on and never end.
That's the way I hope to make life for you, Nell.
How soon do we get to Napoleon, Carl?
How soon would you like to?
Well, you know the answer to that. I want to be home.
I don't want you to get too grand expectations. It's just a place I built myself. But it's good enough for the two of us right now.
Oh, well, it won't be for long.
Now, Nell, Carl? I never promised you no mansion or... Hey, wait a minute. What do you mean it won't be for long?
Can't you guess?
You mean you're expecting...
Well, it'll take a doctor to know for sure, but I don't have any doubt.
Why, honey, we only got married a little over 2 months ago.
It don't take that long, Carl, when a woman's got herself a man like you and has a strong desire to make him a family.
Oh, Nell. Nell, I love you.
Like I love you.
Just give me the chance and I'll make a home big enough for you to be proud of and big enough to bring up as many young'uns as you could want.
If the war don't interfere...
It won't. Not for me. I don't belong on either side. Don't you worry, Nell. That's saying to Napoleon, steamboat a-coming. We'd best get ready to land.
Well, is it very far to Mariana from there?
Why, no. Just a piece south and inland.
It's not on the river?
You want to be on the river, honey? That's where you'll be. By the time you have your firstborn.
I started digging my ditch within a month after we settled in. And the first thing in early spring, when the waters began to rise, I opened up the end of it to the river. So by the time my daughter was born, I was able to give her the best present in the world.
Carl! Carl!
I'm coming now. You all right? Where's the midwife?
Oh, well, she's gone.
She left you alone?
Oh, I'm fine. Don't you worry about me. Darling, don't you want to see your daughter?
Oh, I sure do. Oh, so beautiful. And she's the spitting image of you.
Where were you? Why weren't you here when she was born?
I couldn't bear to see you hurting, Nell.
Oh, silly. That's a woman's lot. And isn't it worth it to bring something like this into the world?
You know what we're going to call her?
No. What?
Missy.
Missy? Where did you get it from?
From the present I promised you with your firstborn. Right almost in your front yard. Here, let me help you sit up. Nell, look.
Why, what's happened down there at the end of the slope? The fields are all gone. And it looks like water.
That's not just any water, Nell girl. That's the Mississippi flowing right through our front yard.
Oh, you promised me a river, and you brought it to me.
That's not the only thing, Nell. It's going to make us rich. And in the next 2 years, Mr. Clemens, it did make us rich. In money, but not all the way in happiness. It was a lonely place, and except for the river, isolated from people. It was a bad time. The war was over, and renegade soldiers dressed as tramps and such were plundering the land. Nell was scared of them. I should have listened to her sooner than I did, but I moved too late. I sold the property, and there was over $25,000 in cash gold the night they came. I woke from a deep sleep to find myself bound and gagged and the air tainted with chloroform. It was black as a witch's pocket. Somewhere far off, I heard the baby crying in my wife's voice.
Don't hurt me, please. Oh, my baby. I told you where the money is.
So you have, lady. Now all that's left is to shut your mouth forever. Shut that kid up.
No, please. You said no violence.
Group C is moving out. The road of the river is alive with soldiers. We can't be caught. And if it won't shut its mouth, I will shut it for it.
No, don't touch my baby.
Let me go, woman. Now, shut that kid.
You killed my baby. Yourself,
and I'll kill you for this. Then I told you, woman. Get out of here.
You said no violence. You said... We'd only gag them, not hurt them. Or I would not have come.
Shut up. I had to change our plan when they waked up. You've done all you could to protect them. Did that satisfy you?
You relieved the woman and the baby alone now?
Of course.
And what about him?
He might be playing possum. We should club him.
No! No more clubbing.
Suppose he could recognize us.
He can't. We put him to sleep with the chloroform. Besides, it is pitch black in here.
Okay, trooper, okay. We will take the chance. We have got some money, so strike a light so we can see to get out of here.
I had no way to stop them. I couldn't move. The gag was so stifling that when I tried to speak, I could make no sound. It was dawn before I managed to wriggle free. And staggering to the other side of the room... I found my wife and daughter.
Alive?
No, Mr. Clemens, dead. There they lay, the poor unoffending ones, their troubles ended. While mine had just begun.
Did you go to the law?
No law or gallows could pay the debt that was owing me.
Well, how could you expect to take matters into your own hands? If it was so dark, you couldn't identify the man.
I had some clues, Mr. Clemens. I had heard their voices. And when they lit the match to see their way out, the hand that held it was missing a thumb. And when I went to the place my money had been hidden among the papers tossed around was one containing a bloody thumbprint.
Well, what use could the last piece of information be to you?
The man without the thumb was the one who had begged his companion should not hurt us. If the print on the paper belonged to the other man, I could identify him definitely enough to kill him. The man's thumbprint is the one sure proof of his identity.
Well, still in all, grant that to be true. How could you go about a search for these passing tramps?
Remember my story. The one I knew I must kill someday had said, Troop C is moving out. We can't be caught. And also he called his companion Trooper.
And you think they were soldiers?
A few miles away, two companies of U.S. cavalry were billeted. Company A was stationary, but Company C had been ordered 50 miles north to Napoleon.
And you followed them?
Yeah. With what money I had left, I made a disguise for myself out of odds and ends of clothing after I had buried my wife and daughter. By the time I reached Napoleon, I had a new trade. I had become a fortune teller.
Did you find your men?
It didn't take me long to find the one who lacked the thumb. His name was Kruger. He was a German, one of nine in the company.
And the only one who had suffered such a wound.
The only one. Besides, I recognized that whining voice. But he was not my prey. It was the other.
So how did you locate the other?
As a fortune teller, I would pass each client a sheet of paper, daub his thumb with red paint, and take a print. It wasn't until the 43rd member of the troop visited me for a reading that I found my man.
How?
I pored over the print of the ball of his thumb with a magnifying glass one whole night. It matched the bloody print left on the paper rifled from secret cache exactly.
So you took the law into your own hands?
Not yet. I had to be totally sure. So I went to Kruger. He was the weak link. He was a superstitious little coward. If I broke him, then I could be sure.
What did you have to drag me down here by the river to this lord-forsaken spot for?
I have been rereading your fortune, and a part of it is so grave, it can't be said in public.
What part? What?
You and another man, whose fortune I also was studying last night, have murdered a woman and a child.
Ah! No!
The palm does not lie. The truth is not to be hidden. Your companion's name was Franz Adler.
Ah! How did you know that? Who are you?
What's the matter, Kruger? Was it too dark in that cabin for you to remember the man whose wife and child you slaughtered?
Well, it was pitch black. We were only shadows. If I don't remember you, how can
I you... could feel you were missing a thumb.
Well, I didn't do it. Franz did. I tried to stop him, but I was too late for your wife and the baby. But I made him leave you alone. I saved your life. Now, please, don't kill me.
I have no intention of killing you.
Well, what is it that you want? The money?
Yes.
Why? I don't have it. He took it from me. He has it hidden away.
Then let him find it and bring it to me. Not you. Him. At this spot tonight at the stroke of 12.
Yeah, but how can I be sure that...
You had better be sure.
But the sentries...
If I can avoid them, so can he. If not, I promise you, you will die. I have read it in your palm.
Oh, no, please. I don't want to die.
Then have him meet me here at midnight. Tell him to come by horse and bring the money in the saddlebags. Otherwise, I shall go to the authorities and see you both hung. The man was a coward, Mr. Twain, and superstitious to his roots. I knew my revenge was near at last, and I could taste the sweetness of it. I settled down by the riverbank to wait for the murderer.
At this moment in his story, Mark Twain reports that the dying man sagged back against his pillows, gasping for breath, as though in his last throes. Was he going to be able to finish his story? I'm afraid, like Mark Twain, we're going to have to wait until I return with Act 3.
You've changed, Bernard. You're not the man I married.
What do you mean, Francine?
Remember the way you were, vulnerable. You made mistakes. But now, look, you're confident. Everything you do turns out right. It's that book you sent away for.
It's just a catalog from the Consumer Information Center. It lists more than 200 federal publications you can send for on building, fixing, eating,
buying, selling, working, playing, living.
And more than half of them are free. Yes, Francine, the man you married is gone for good.
All right, Bernard. But would you make just one more mistake for old time's sake?
All right. For you, I'll just replace that window glass like I used to. Whatever you do, learn to do it better. Send for your free catalog. Just write Consumer Catalog, Pueblo, Colorado, 81009. Francine, send for that publication on first aid.
What was that address?
Pueblo, Colorado, 81009.
Volunteers. Call your local Girl Scout Council today.
Girl Scouts part of being a girl, learning to be in a very big world, learning to care and learning to share, and seeking the answers tomorrow will bring.
Left Samuel Clemens, better known as Mark Twain, by the bedside of a dying man whose story he later penned and made immortal. Exhausted by his narrative and the reliving of his tragic life, the man had sunk back against his pillows, fighting for breath. Aware that every breath may well be the man's last, Mark Twain leans over him anxiously.
Mr. Ritter.
I'm not done yet. I have to tell you the rest so I can make my request.
It might be better if I fetch a doctor.
No doctor can do anything for me now.
I don't know if you should tax your strength.
What other use have I for it? It won't keep me alive any more than I had determined Franz Adler would live beyond the moment I saw him. I wanted to watch his face to gloat as he struggled in a death agony, to save him my revenge for my wife and child that he had killed. But that was to be denied me.
He didn't meet the appointment?
Oh, yes. He came. But before midnight, the moon had gone behind heavy clouds, and the night was as pitch black as the night he had come to my cabin. I lay hidden in the mangrove and watched him come on horseback. All I could see was a silhouette and the bulging saddlebags. My knife was in my hand. As he passed me, with one leap, I was on him and had him dragged off his horse. And then all the plans went wrong. Instead of being the ambusher, I was ambushed. I drove my knife straight up through his belly, under the rib cage, and into his heart. He was dead before he could cry out. And I had my own life to think of. I mounted the plunging horse, and as the shots rang out, I clapped my heels to him and fled.
So, you had your revenge?
I thought so. So I was cheated out of the money.
Well, how so?
By dawn, I had to rest the horse and myself, but when I stripped the saddle and looked in the bags, there wasn't any money. They were stuffed with sage grass and the like.
Did you go back for it?
To put my neck in a noose? No. Besides, I didn't care all that much.
About $25,000?
It was blood money. If I hadn't cheated to get it in the first place, my wife and child might be alive today. Besides, the first man, Kruger, had double-crossed me. You could be sure he had picked up the money, deserted, and faded out of sight as I did.
Well, how did you fade out of sight?
How did Kruger? That's one part of the story. For the moment, the way I did was to beat my way to New Orleans. Ship on board as a hand before the mast, stagger across the world waiting only for death. 2 years ago, my health began to fail. And in my purposeless way, I had wandered here into Munich. I had no money, sought work, and was hired to be the night watchman in the dead house you have just visited. I liked it. I felt I belonged among the dead. Then one night, alone in the watchroom, cold, numb, comfortless, the incredible happened. Over my head, the dead bell rang. It was the first time I had ever heard it. For a moment, I was almost paralyzed, and I pulled myself together and ran to the corpse room. On a board table, one of the shrouded corpses, wagging its head from side to side, was sitting upright.
Help him! Help me!
It's all right. I'm here. Are you really alive?
Well, yes, but I am bound. I can't move. Can't talk. Get me out of this.
Who are you?
What does it matter? My name, Franz Adler, if you want to know.
Franz Adler? But you can't be. You are dead.
Dead? Not dead yet, as you can see.
After 17 years.
Oh, what are you talking about? I was only knifed last night. Get me out of these bonds.
Yes, yes. First, let me strip the winding cloth from your face.
Yes. That is good. Oh. Good.
No. It is you. The same Franz Adler.
What is the matter with you, fool? Unwind the rest of these bandages so I can move. I am dying. Have mercy.
Did you have mercy 20 years or so ago when you murdered my wife and my baby?
What are you talking about?
Napoleon. Do you remember the town in America where you and Kruger were stationed as you served your time in the U.S. cavalry?
How could you know about that?
You murdered my wife and baby.
You? Oh, the Fortsanted, the one who drove poor Kruger out of his mind.
I had a rendezvous with you by the Mississippi River. Do you remember that?
Yes, I remember.
I thought I killed you there, Adler. No man could have lived after the way I sank my knife.
You are right.
And why are you here and still alive?
Because you killed the wrong man. It was Kruger you drove your knife into.
I was stunned. My whole life fell away from under me. I looked at the ghastly specter in front of me, his whole body swathed in bandages, helpless. My prisoner. And all through his stammered explanations, the one inflexible thought in my mind was, you escaped me once, you won't escape this time.
Please, what do you want of me?
I want to know how you're still alive when I killed you all those years ago.
You talked to that fool Kruger. You scared him half to death. He came to me saying that I had to meet you by the river with the money.
But you sent him instead?
He had no choice. He knew I would kill him unless he obeyed.
Poor silly little man, caught between forces he could not handle. So you double-crossed him too and allowed me to kill him first.
What do you mean, first?
Before you started shooting and trying to kill me.
No. That was the watch patrol.
Don't lie to me. Only one person was firing.
You would have killed me with as little compunction as you killed my wife and my baby.
No, no, that was an accident. Look, please, help me out of here. I can make you rich again.
Oh.
The money, the $25,000, your money.
It isn't all spent by now?
No, 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 it is still hidden where it was 17 years ago.
You didn't take it and spend it?
When Kruger was found dead, I was arrested for his murder. I managed to escape from the army stockade and flee America back to Germany. I never had a chance to pick up the money.
The money poor Kruger thought he was bringing me in the saddlebags.
Yes, he was a fool. But we have not, huh? We are men. We can make a bargain.
What bargain?
Unloose me from these bandages. Set me free. And I will tell you where to find the money.
How can I trust you?
You can trust me.
As much as you trust me?
Yes, yes.
All right. First, where's the money?
It is in the town of Napoleon, at the corner...
Wait, not so fast. Let me write this down. Napoleon, yes. Corner of the...
The corner of Orleans and Market.
Mm-hmm.
A brick livery stable.
Yes.
A cut a corner from the courthouse. Third stone,
yes.
Fourth row. Behind the... Oh, God, this house. Help me out of the bandages.
Why?
I need a doctor. Or I will die.
But you are here in the dead house. You are already dead.
No, no. I ran the dead bell.
In all the years in this dead house, the dead bell has never rung.
But
I didn't hear it ring.
You came in answer to it.
Did I?
Yeah, and we made a bargain. Please, I told you where the money is. You can have it back.
Can I have my wife back? Or my baby daughter?
You've got to help me.
I will. I caught you escaping from the grave. This time I intend to make sure that you will be thrust into it forever. He had a long, hard death of it. I sat and watched him all the time. It was all of 3 hours and 6 minutes from the time he rang the bell.
That's a terrible story. I'm sorry you told me all this.
I had to be sure you would do me this last favor.
And what is that?
Take this, please.
What is it?
It's the directions where to find the money. In Napoleon, Mr. Clemens. You expect to be there in the next year. I want you to find it and send it...
send it to you?
No. I shall be gone by then. After Adler died, I spent some months making inquiries. Kruger's death was very much on my mind. I found he had a son, a shoemaker at number 14 Königstrasse, Mannheim. A widower with some young children. I want the money to go to him as some amends. The man did try to save my wife and child's life. It was a poor recompense for me to, even in accident, take his life.
This tortured man was dead. And he had laid on me a heavy burden. Within the next year, here I was on the Mississippi, nearing Napoleon, with my scribbled directions of how to find a fortune that I was far from morally sure anyone should own. But, willy-nilly, I was cursed with having to make that decision.
Well, Miss Clemens, you've been a stranger during the voyage.
We're approaching a landfall I must make.
I don't know if it's a regular port of call for you.
Well, where might that be?
Napoleon.
Napoleon?
Yeah, that's right.
You wish me to land you there?
Have you any objection?
Me? For myself? No. But I just don't hardly know how I could go about it.
What do you mean?
Well, about 7 years ago, the Arkansas River crested and bust right through Napoleon, tore it all to rags, and emptied it into the Mississippi. Why, right this moment, the boat is paddling dead center over where the town used to be. There just isn't any Napoleon anymore.
No secret cache of soiled money. And a way out from under a promise I never should have made. I've always loved the Mississippi. And I love her still. Among all her other virtues, the lady knows how to bury her dead.
A complex story, related by a master storyteller, sandwiched among fact and fiction in Mark Twain's account of his return to the Mississippi. Is it true? I can only quote Mr. Twain himself. I was gratified to be able to answer promptly, and I did. I said, I didn't know. I'll be back shortly.
Take your contact. Take it now. Give your code to contact.
Can your cold medicine fight the congestion, shrink the swollen membranes, help relieve the runny, sneezy, cloggy misery caused by every known cold virus? Are you sure? Contact can. Today's Contact does all that up to 12 hours, all day, all night, no matter what cold virus attacks. That's the wonder of Contact.
If you're going to Contact.
Take only as directed.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Gregory Peck. With original designs and paintings contributed by leading artists of every continent, UNICEF greeting cards are a beautiful way to give. Available all over the world through voluntary nonprofit organizations. When you buy UNICEF greeting cards, you're helping to feed, clothe, and educate needy children. Help the children of the world through UNICEF, the United Nations Children's Fund.
Samuel Langhorne Clemens. Under either name, he is one of America's immortals. Changing times may make succeeding generations less aware of him, but somewhere, always, there will be those to rediscover him and not allow him to die, as he himself was unwilling to when, in reply to a false news story, he sent the famous cable to the New York Press, "The reports of my death are greatly exaggerated." Our cast included Leon Janney, Bryna Rayburn, Robert Dryden, and Ian Martin. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown.
And now, a preview of our next tale.
The only way to learn how to swim is to jump in the water, right?
I simply can't make you understand, can I?
Well, maybe I can make you understand. Forget it. You want to get that dinner ready? I'm hungry.
Yes, I'm going now.
Look, why don't you change first?
Change?
Yeah, your clothes. Get more comfortable.
Well, yes, I think I'd like to do that, George. I won't be long.
Take it easy. That's my surprise. That's a teller.
Get him out of here. Please, George, take him away.
It's only a dog, for Pete's sake. He's not going to hurt you.
Get it out, George. Please.
Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Contact, the 12-hour cold capsule, and True Value Hardware Stores. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.